Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Numbers chapter 22. I'm going to cover the last half of the chapter, verses 22 through 41, and this will be the story of Balaam's talking donkey, the favorite club that atheist fools like to use to try to bash over the heads of Christians to say, see there, the Bible's full of fables because donkeys don't talk. Well, we'll look at that. Our context is this. In the first half of Numbers 22, verses 1 through 21, we have Balak, the king of Moab, who is concerned because Israel, all 600,000 men, all 2 million of them, are camped right up there at the northern edge of the Dead Sea, east of the Jordan River, in Moab, around Mount Pisgah and Heshbon, up around that area, and they're getting ready to cross over to the Jordan River. They were not going to harm the Moabites at all, but the king of Moab, Balak, was worried that the Israelites were going to do that, and so he goes up and tries to hire Balaam, the internationally famous false prophet and sorcerer, to come down from Pethor, which is right up there near Carchemish in Syria, to come down south all the way down to Moab and put a curse on the Israelites. Now, when the first Moabite embassy went up there, Balaam inquired of God. God said, no, don't go down there. You're not going to curse my people, Israel. So Balaam told the Moabite ambassadors to go back to Moab and be disappointed. I'm not coming. But then Balak said, well, let's try again. So he sent some more people up, more messages. He promised him honor, gave him more money. He promised him a bigger reward if he'd come down here, come down to Moab and curse the Israelites. So Balaam decides he's going to go. And God said, okay. And finally, when he was talking to God, God said, all right, you can go, but you say only what I tell you to say. You don't go down there to curse Israel. So that's where we are. Let's start with verse 22. Well, I'll give a little preview here. Verse 21, so Balaam arose in the morning and saddled his donkey and went with the leaders of Moab. So he's going back. This is after the second Moabite embassy up to Syria to see Balaam. So Balaam is headed back down to Moab. Verse 22, but God was angry because he was going, and the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as an adversary against him. Now he was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him. Now the first problem we have here is, why was God angry because Balaam was going? Hadn't God, in just the previous two verses, in Numbers 22:20, given Balaam permission to go? Let me read that. Verse 20, God came to Balaam at night and said to him, since these men have come to summon you, that's the Moabite ambassadors, get up and go with them, but you must only do what I tell you. So God tells him to go, and now God's angry with him, Balaam, after he left. Sounds like an apparent contradiction. Here's some options to answer the apparent contradiction. I emphasize apparent. There is no contradiction. Option number one, God had only ironically given Balaam permission to go. He said, all right, if you want to go, just go. I don't want you to go, but since you insist. Well, I don't really think that's a good answer. Option number two, God gave Balaam permission to go only so that Balaam could go down there and be punished for his lust. I think that God had originally forbade Balaam to go at all, and then he relented and said, go, and I think the reason was he was going to make an object lesson out of him. He was going to make him go down there and bless Israel instead of curse Israel, but unfortunately, when Balaam left, he wasn't going down there to bless Israel. He was going down there to curse him. God either knew that supernaturally, or it was obvious, but at any rate, God is upset with Balaam now. He might have given him permission to go, but he didn't like what Balaam was going to go down there to do. All right, so that's option two. Balaam is allowed to go so he could be punished when he got down there. Option number three, the permission to let Balaam go had been given on the condition of Balak's men, the Moabite ambassadors, calling Balaam. We read that in verse 20. God came to Balaam at night and said to him, since these men have come to summon you, get up and go with them, but you must only do what I tell you. Since these men have come to summon you, and they didn't summon Balaam, according to these commentators, and therefore Balaam was going outside the will of God because God was supernaturally have refrained the ambassadors from calling Balaam. I think that's a stretch. I don't believe that. I've got four commentators who at least suggest this. Gill, Jameson, Fawcett, Brown, Benson, and Poole. I mean, the problem I have with that, what's the big deal about the Moabites calling Balaam? That just sounds like a answer in search of an argument. That just doesn't sound reasonable to me. So that's option number three. I don't like it. Option number three, again, we're looking for options as to why God changed his mind. He said, don't go. And now he's saying, well, actually, he changed his mind twice. At first he said, absolutely don't go. Then he says, you can go, but only say what I'm telling you. And then once Balaam takes out, then God's angry with him and confronts him with a sword and a talking donkey. So it seems that God has changed his mind, but actually he's not. We have to look deeper than the surface to see what's going on here. All right, so option number four, why did God get angry when he had given Balaam earlier permission to go in verse 20? John Gill suggests this. Balaam had not told the messengers, the Moabite messengers, that Balaam was forbidden to curse the Israelites, that God had forbade Balaam to curse the Israelites, and then he goes to the Moabite ambassadors and says, here I am, well, let's go down to Israel. What's the ambassadors going to think? They're going to think, oh, he's coming down to curse Israel. Well, that's false pretense, and God didn't like that. He didn't want it to look like, according to this view, he didn't want Balaam to go down there looking like he was getting ready to curse Israel. And that's reasonable, if you ask me. Option number five, why did God allow Balaam to go and then get angry with him when he went? Well, the Poole commentaries, Matthew Poole says this, this permission for God to let Balaam go was a mere license to go because of Balaam's stubbornness. In other words, he was going to go anyway. He says, okay, you just go ahead and go. I'll take care of you later. Now, let's see what Poole says this. These words, Numbers 22:20, that's the verse that says, since these men have come to summon you, get up and go with them. You must only do what I tell you. Those words, according to Poole, contain no approbation, but a mere permission. And that in anger, as Balaam might easily have understood if he had considered his own heart or the circumstances of his concession. This was no more an approbation by God than that passage of Christ to Judas, that thou doest, do quickly. In other words, Jesus isn't saying, hey, I love what you're doing, Judas, you're getting ready to kill me. He's just saying, go ahead and get it over with if you're going to do it. Well, I think that's pretty clever, but I don't really think that's the answer. Poole comes up with another idea, is that Balaam went down to Salem with ill design. God told him to go, but you can't curse the people, and then Balaam goes with the intent of cursing the people. I might have said this in a previous option, but this is the idea. Balaam went down there to Moab, intending to curse the people and make some money. And God, this is according to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, God knew Balaam's secret purpose to curse Israel in return for a fee, and so he got angry about it. And I think that's the easiest solution. Balaam was trying to have it both ways. He was trying to obey God ostensibly or formally, but deep in his heart, he was thinking about that money. Now, this angel of the Lord, verse 22, that shows up in front of Balaam, it's probably Jesus, as John Gill says. Every time I see angel of Jehovah, I just assume it was Jesus. I used to question that, but not anymore. Now, Jesus's opposition, the angel of Jehovah's, the angel of the Lord's opposition to Balaam actually was mercy, because if Balaam had kept going down there and had followed out his intention to curse Israel, he would have gone to the bad place in a hurry. As soon as he might have even been killed by God on the, and who knows what God would have done. So the angel of the Lord's actually restraining Balaam from serious sin. Numbers 22, verses 23 through 27. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand, the donkey turned off from the way and went into the field. But Balaam struck the donkey to turn her back into the way. Then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path of the vineyards with a wall on this side and a wall on that side. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pressed herself to the wall and pressed Balaam's foot against the wall. So he struck her again. The angel of the Lord went further, and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn to the right hand or the left. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. So Balaam was angry and struck the donkey with his stick. Now, this donkey is a perfect animal in this situation to show something. The irony that an internationally known seer was blind to the angel of Jehovah, to Jesus, but his dumb ass wasn't, as the NIV Study Bible points it out. Now, here's a question. Why did Jesus reveal himself to the donkey but not to Balaam? Here's what John Calvin said about that. To the great disgrace of the prophet, the glory of the angel was first of all apparent to the ass. He had been boasting before this of extraordinary visions, as Balaam had done that, and now what was visible to the eyes of a beast was invisible to him. Whence came this blindness, but from the avarice by which he had been so stupefied that he preferred filthy lucre to the holy calling of God? And so the idea here, in my opinion, is that Jesus is making a mockery of Balaam. Hey, you big international prophet, your dumb ass sees spiritual reality faster than you do. Now, why is the angel of the Lord standing with a sword in his hand? The sword is a symbol of the manifestation of the wrath of God, as Colin Delitzsch says. Basically, the angel says, hold it right there, Balaam. I don't think you better go down there and curse Israel to make a fee. Now, the angel of the Lord, the donkey has gone off the road and obviously went into a vineyard, and there was walls in the vineyard. And the donkey tried to get back on the road, or Balaam tried to get the donkey back on the road, and they got stuck in a passageway with a wall on each side and the angel of the Lord in the front. The donkey can't go frontwards because the angel of the Lord standing there with a sword. The donkey can't go to the left because there's a wall. She can't go to the right because there's a wall. And the donkey came back up because donkeys don't back up. And so in her fright, the donkey started squirming and smashed Balaam's foot against the wall. And Balaam is getting angry. And so he's smashing the donkey, or striking the donkey on the rear, on the rump, I'm sure. And then Balaam and the donkey is squirming and upset and crushing Balaam's foot against the wall. And so finally the donkey says, there's nothing I can do here. So the donkey lays down, just collapses to the ground. She lay down under Balaam. It's a good thing she didn't lay down on top of Balaam. And so basically now Balaam doesn't have any transportation. And so he's still beating the donkey with a stick. We go down to Numbers 22, verses 28 and 29. And the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, what have I done to you that you have struck me these three times? Then Balaam said to the donkey, because you have made a mockery of me. If there had been a sword in my hand, I would have killed you by now. Now, of course, this is the famous talking donkey incident. I just read an apologetics article, and the author said that he had seen so many skeptics on Facebook and on social media saying, oh, the talking snake in the Garden of Eden and the talking donkey, that proves that the Bible's just a book of fables. It's not true. We only hope their ignorance saves them from the condign judgment that they're going to receive if they keep mocking the Word of God. So we're going to look at this idea of a talking donkey from an apologetics angle. Now, the first thing we need to note is this is not a fable. You know, not a fable that animals are given the right to speak. And you say, see there, it's a fable. No, but in a fable, the animals are not real. They're conjectured by the imagination. This is a narrative of what happened. There's no indication of a fable anywhere. There's no moral. Well, there's no direct moral point. Indirectly, there's a moral point. But there's in a fable, it says this is what sour grapes. You know, it's obvious what the point is. It's obviously made up to make a moral point. This is a narrative. This is history. And some commentators say this didn't actually happen. It happened in a vision. There's no vision here. There's nothing that comes any close to looking like a vision. So this actually happened. The donkey spoke. But now, the donkey spoke, but that doesn't mean that the donkey was speaking with her voice. It says the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey. The Lord was making the donkey speak, a temporary borrowing of the donkey's vocal cords, because donkeys don't speak normally. All right, before we get into the question of why would a donkey speak, let's look at the question of why did not Balaam express surprise at the miracle of hearing the donkey speak? Well, here's some options to explain that. This is John Gill citing Josephus. He did express surprise. It's just not written down because Moses didn't capture the surprise. Well, that's reasonable, I guess. John Gill has another option as to why Balaam did not express surprise at the talking donkey, because as a magician, Balaam was used to hearing animals speak. This is what magicians do. They use demons to take over animal voices and make the animals speak to impress people. And so since he was used to hearing animals speak, that didn't surprise him. Remember, this guy is deep into the occult. You and I don't hear animals speak very much, but we're not deep into the occult. The pulpit commentary has a quote backing that up. Let me read that for you. That Balaam was a prophet. He was accustomed to hear divine voices speaking to him when no man was near. He had a large and unquestioning faith and a peculiar familiarity with the unseen. Balaam was a sorcerer. It was part of his profession to show signs and wonders, such as even now in those countries confound the most experienced and skeptical beholders. It is likely that he had often made dumb animals speak in order to bewilder others. He must indeed have been conscious to some extent of imposture, but he would not draw any sharp line in his own mind between the marvels which really happened to him and the marvels he displayed to others. Both as prophet and as sorcerer, he must have lived more than any other, even of that age, in an atmosphere of the supernatural. And I think that's exactly why He wasn't surprised that the donkey was speaking. He'd been doing that sort of stuff before. In fact, you'll wonder whether God is not mocking him. You say, oh yeah, you made animals speak. I can make an animal speak too, Balaam. And I can make your dumb animal smarter than you, Balaam, because he can see the supernatural faster than you can, you dumb, internationally famous prophet of the devil. Third option as to why Balaam didn't show any surprise, this is Adam Clark's ideas, because Balaam immediately knew it was the Lord's doing when he saw the angel of Jehovah, or actually even before then, when he saw the donkey speak, before he saw the angel of Jehovah, he immediately knew this was Yahweh's doing. I don't believe that for a minute. If he knew it was Yahweh's doing, why did he beat the ass in anger? He would have been suitably penitent and humble and contrite if he knew it was God spoken to him. So I don't think that's a good idea, explaining why he didn't show surprise at this talking donkey. Jameson Fawcett and Brown said he was so mad with the prospect of material gain, so caught up with the lust of money, that he just didn't notice that his donkey was speaking. He didn't notice that it was a strange thing that his donkey was speaking. I think that's a stretch too. I think the easiest way to explain this man is used to talking animals, and God is using a talking animal to make fun of him, to mock what he's done in the past. Now, we have another problem, is I think I've explained why Balaam didn't express surprise at the talking donkey, but what about the others present? How about the Moabite ambassadors who were going back with Balaam, back to Moab? Well, the public commentary suggests that these ambassadors had probably gone on ahead to inform Balak of Balaam's coming, and I think that makes a lot of sense, so that's why they weren't there to express surprise. What about Balaam's two servants who were with him? Pulpit commentary says this, they were probably used to hearing Balaam talking to himself because Balaam was a sorcerer muttering to his demons all the time. But this is, and that's pulpit commentary's idea, but this is my idea. Remember, they're on the way. The donkey heads off the road, goes through a vineyard. I'm sure the servants just stood there and waited until Balaam got control of his ass and hauled his ass back to the road. That didn't come out right. But you know what I mean. He directed his animal to go back to the road, and the two servants just waited for that to happen. And that's why, and they didn't see the angel of the Lord talking to Balaam, and they didn't hear the talking donkey. I think that's the easiest way to explain that. Now, Balaam is upset. He's beaten the ass. Now, he tells the donkey that you made a mockery out of me. Well, think about this. The donkey really has. First of all, he's made Balaam look pretty undignified because Balaam can't control his own donkey. He's flat on the ground, beating a motionless donkey and talking to him. So, no, he doesn't look like the great international seer that he considered himself to be. Now, let's look at what was the nature of the donkey's speech. Well, as Jameson Fawcett and Brown suggest, and lots of commentators do, they say this is a vision, but it doesn't say it was a vision. Here's Jameson Fawcett and Brown says this, quote, improbability of a vision being described as an actual occurrence in the middle of a plain history. There's your problem. It doesn't make any sense. When I say that Jameson Fawcett and Brown suggested it was a vision, what he's doing is quoting other people who say it was a vision. Another argument against the idea that this talking donkey happened in a vision is 2 Peter 2:16, which reads this way, but he, that's Balaam, received a rebuke for his own transgression. For a mute donkey speaking with the voice of a man restrained the madness of the prophet. Doesn't say it was a vision. Peter quotes it like it actually happened. So what was it then? Well, this is my humble opinion. Jesus barred the donkey's vocal cords and made the donkey speak. Peter says in 2 Peter 2:16 that the voice was the voice of a man. Not the voice of a donkey, but the voice of a man. Sounded like it was coming from the donkey. Sounded like it was the voice of the donkey, but it was the voice of a man that the donkey was speaking with. And I believe that the man that made the donkey speak was Jesus. Now, if demons can make animals talk with their sorcery, isn't Jesus greater than demons? And how about human ventriloquists? They can make animals speak. Is Jesus greater than a human ventriloquist? Why should we be so shocked at the God who made the universe can make a donkey speak? Well, if you're a skeptic, of course you will be shocked, just like you're going to be shocked when you bust open the gates of hell because of your sin, which you refuse to admit despite its palpable existence. Let's go down to Numbers 22, verses 30 through 33. The donkey said to Balaam, am I not your donkey on which you have ridden all your life to this day? Have I ever been accustomed to do so to you? And he said, no. Then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand. And he bowed all the way to the ground. That's Balaam bowed all the way to the ground. The angel of the Lord said to Balaam, "Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out as an adversary, because your way was contrary to me. But the donkey saw me and turned aside from me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, I would surely have killed you just now and let her live." In other words, Balaam, your dumb ass saved your dumb ass because I was getting ready to kill you. Now, of course, this donkey speaking makes it look like the donkey has intelligence, but remember, it's Jesus making the donkey appear to have intelligence to make fun of Balaam. Now, in verse 31, Balaam bows all the way to ground in front of the angel of the Lord, in front of Jesus. Why? Could be out of respect. Could have been for the fear of being killed. Of course, those two ideas are sort of related. I suspect he was afraid that he was going to get killed. We go now to Numbers 22, verses 34 to 35. Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, "I have sinned, for I did not know that you were standing in the way against me. Now then, if it is displeasing to you, I will turn back." Ooh, such humility, such contrition. But the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, "Go with the men, but you shall speak only the word which I tell you." So Balaam went along with the leaders of Balak. So once again, God's not concerned about Balak going down into Moab. He's going to use Balak to make a mockery out of the Moabites, but he wants him to do exactly what he tells him. Speak only the word which I tell you. So the idea is that God's not upset with Balaam going to Moab. He's upset with Balaam going to Moab with evil intentions, pecuniary intentions. So as the NIV Study Bible says, now Balaam knows for sure he has to prophesy exactly like God tells him, no matter how much money Balak offers him. Now in verse 34, he offers to turn back. And my opinion is that the angel of the Lord scared him to death when he saw that. He says, "I'm finished with this. I'm out of here. I want to go back." John Gill on the other side, on the other hand, says probably he didn't do it with a very hearty attitude. He didn't say he was going to turn back with a very hearty attitude because he still wanted to go down there to make money. I don't think so. I think he's probably scared by now. Jameson Fawcett and Brown says this, "Notwithstanding this confession, I will turn back. Balaam evinced no spirit of penitence as he speaks of desisting only from the outward act." So there's your options as far as Balaam's attitude. He's got a cocky attitude. He says, "Okay, I'll go on down there, but I'm going to still do what I meant to do. I'll just pretend that I'm willing to go back." Or he was frightened and really did want to go back. Or he wanted to go back, but not really. He wanted to go back, but under compulsion. He was going to go back under compulsion. All right, so let me say it again. He was frightened to death and wanted to go back of his own free will with a great hearty desire. Option number two, he wanted to go back, but because he was afraid, he was forced to go back under compulsion. And option number three, he didn't want to go back at all because he was cocky. He wanted to go down there and continue to prophesy to get his money. Well, it's interesting the different attitudes that people put on Balaam. Here's what Adam Clark says. This is a good one. This is what he says on verse 38 a little bit later. He says, "Here was a noble resolution, and he was certainly faithful to it. Though he wished to please the king and get wealth and honor, yet he would not displease God to realize even these bright prospects. Many who slander this poor, semi-antinomian prophet have not half his piety." Well, I tell you one thing I've learned about Adam Clark. He's an Arminian, and Arminians don't like the idea of God's judgment too much. I think he's entirely too easy on Balaam. I think Balaam was going to go back under compulsion, or either he was being a hypocrite, wasn't planning to turn back at all. But no, I don't think he went back because he was scared of the angel of the Lord. But Jesus says, "No, I'm going to let you go, but you do what I say." We go now to Numbers 22, verses 36 through 38. When Balak heard that Balaam was coming, he went out to meet him at the city of Moab, which is on the Arnon border at the extreme end of the border. That means the extreme edge of Moab. Then Balak said to Balaam, "Did I not urgently send to you to call you? Why did you not come to me? Am I really unable to honor you?" So Balaam said to Balak, "Behold, I have come now to you, and I'm able to speak it. Am I able to speak anything at all? The word that God puts in my mouth, that I shall speak." So Balak's learned his lesson when that donkey spoke to him and he saw the angel of the Lord with a sword. I'm not going to prophesy just like God tells me. Of course, Balaam realizes that Balak doesn't want that, and that's why he's giving Balak a heads up. "Don't you expect me to do exactly what you want me to do just because you're paying me. That's not going to happen." All right, so Balaam is going down to see Balak, but where? At the city of Moab. That's generally thought to be Ar, which is south of the Arnon River, the capital city of Moab. And that's way down, halfway down the Dead Sea. Remember, the Israelites are in the Transjordan at the northern end of the Dead Sea. So Balaam went way past the Israelites, all the way down to the south, to cut his deal with, or to negotiate, I shall say, with Balak. Now, John Gill and Jameson Fawcett and Brown say that Balaam came to the extremity of Balak's dominions to show respect to Balak. Now, Balak, when he sees Balaam, says, "Hey, did I not urgently send to call you?" Now, what he's referring to, that he sent two embassies up there. The first embassy was refused by Balaam, and now he sent another embassy up there. And he's saying to Balaam, "Why did you take so long to get down here? Am I really unable to honor you? Are you taking so long to come down here because I didn't offer to pay you enough? Do you think I'm poor? You think I can't give you a bunch of money to prophesy?" I mean, you know, they had TV preachers back then too, didn't they? Prosperity. People who turn godliness into gain. Well, nothing's new under the sun, is it? But Balaam says, "I'm not interested in the money. I'm only going to say what God puts in my mouth. So just get out of your idea, Balak, that I'm down here for the money." Balaam has had sort of a change of heart, at least outwardly. Now Balaam says in verse 38 to Balak, "The word that God puts in my mouth that I shall speak." Now he's referring to Yahweh, but he doesn't use the term Yahweh. Elohim, I think it is here. "The word that God puts in my mouth that I shall speak." Now this is the statement that makes Clark think that Balaam is an honorable man, a godly man. Let me read that quote again. "Here was a noble resolution. He was certainly faithful to it." In other words, only to speak what God told him to speak. He was faithful to that. "Though he wished to please the king and get wealth and honor, yet he would not displease God to realize even these bright prospects. Many who slander this poor semi-antinomian prophet have not half his piety." Well, I guess I don't have half the piety of Balaam, because I think he was a money-grubbing, demon-possessed, false prophet. Jameson Fawcett Brown disagrees with me. He says, "This appears to be a pious answer. I'm only going to do what God tells me." I really think this is foxhole religion. I think that talking donkey incident scared him to death. I don't think there's any piety here. I think he's operating out of fear. We go now to verses 39 and 41, and we will finish up Numbers chapter 22. "And Balaam went with Balak, and they came to Kiriath Huzoth. Balak sacrificed oxen and sheep and sent some to Balaam and the leaders who were with him. Then it came about in the morning that Balak took Balaam and brought him up to the high places of Baal, and he saw from there a portion of the people." All right, we have some place names here. Verse 39, Balak took Balaam up to Kiriath Huzoth. Now, BibleMaps.org says that that's the same as Mount Pisgah, but its description doesn't say that. The description in BibleAtlas.org says that Kiriath Huzoth was a city near Ar, which is way down to the south of the Arnon River. I don't believe that. I think it's up here near Mount Pisgah, north to the northern tip of the Dead Sea in the Transjordan area, because that's where the Israelites are, and Balak is taking Balaam up there to look at the Israelites. It says in the last part of verse 41, "And he saw from there," talking about Balaam, "he saw from there a portion of the people." He went up there, assuming it's Mount Pisgah, as my map says. He went up there, or let's just say it's Kiriath Huzoth. He went up there high enough to see that, man, there's a lot of Israelites in this place, and that's who I'm supposed to curse. Now, Kiriath Huzoth literally means city of streets, and John Gill says that that literal translation indicates a big population, and so some speculate from that Balak was appealing to Balaam's pity. "Look at all the people up here in this city, and they're going to get wiped out by these Israelites unless you curse them," John Gill says. Well, maybe that's a speculation that might be true. Now, these places of Baal, high places of Baal, places of idolatry. Remember, the national religion, the national idol of Moab was Chemosh, and Gill says these places of Baal, the Baal might be their god Chemosh. If I remember, Baal just means Lord. Baal Peor is another name for the local Baal there. Jameson Fawcett Brown says, or Chemosh, it doesn't matter, it's just the idols of the Moabites. As they were amongst the idols of the Moabites, as Balaam looks out over the Israelites and is being told by Balak to curse these guys. Ladies and gentlemen, we will leave it there for this audio. Next audio, we will look at Numbers 23, verses 1 through 30, Balaam's first two oracles. we'll see whether Balak got his money's worth. Hope to see you for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.